I was in Japan once. I preached for a week, most of a week, in Tokyo in a big city auditorium. And Dr. Russell Anderson and I decided that we wanted to stay an extra day. This we did, and we flew to the town of Hiroshima. We stayed for a day, and one of the most eventful days of my entire life was spent in the town of Hiroshima. We went to a hospital where patients were still on beds of affliction who had not as much as lifted up their heads since the atomic blast which ended World War II. I recall going to a church there in Hiroshima, and a pastor, by the way, the pastor had been to the conference in Tokyo, and we went to Hiroshima, and he asked us to come and visit his church. Now, we did not visit during a service, but we did go visit the church. And I don't know if you know it or not, but you don't wear shoes to church in Japan. When you walk inside the vestibule, they have looks like a hat rack or coat rack, just shelf after shelf of all different kinds of look like house shoes. They're basically the kind that just cover your toe, have a padded bottom, nothing covers the heel, and you pick out a pair of shoes, or in the case of Brother Colston, a pair of boots, and you wear them, and you leave your shoes in the vestibule. And of course, if we did that, we'd have to have a lot of Airwick and some kind of spray and so forth. And I thank God we don't do that. But when I walked in the house, as is the custom, I took off my shoes and I walked in the house, the parsonage, back in the back of the church. And when I did that, the pastor was so honored that I would enter into his house, he bowed, literally bowed to the floor, and all the way placed his nose on the floor. And next door to him, there was a lady who had heard of me and read some of my books. Her husband was injured, paralyzed completely in the blast. And I went over and prayed for her husband and talked to the lady. She was so honored to think that a man from America whose books that she had read would come into her house. And as I walked away, she was on her knees, bowing with her face toward the ground. And for blocks I walked. And as far long as I could see her, she was on her knees with her face bowed toward the ground. Now, this is sort of a custom in Japan. I do not necessarily think we ought to adopt that custom, but I do think there's a certain kind of attitude that often accompanies fundamentalism that we ought to watch all the time. It's so hard to prevent this attitude of not being tender-hearted, this attitude of being abrasive and unkind and off too often too abrupt in our personal relationships, this attitude of not being gracious and tender-hearted and long-suffering and patient in our personal relationships. And it's so hard to prevent it. You know, the truth is, every asset has a liability. For example, a person gets conviction. It's awful hard to get conviction without getting stubbornness. Sometimes they're Siamese twins, and about the time I get the conviction I want, I get the stubbornness I don't want, and then I work on eliminating the stubbornness, and as I spray the stubbornness away, I find I spray away the conviction also. It's difficult. And so when a fundamentalist gets conviction, if he doesn't watch it, he'll become mean as an old goat and have a bad spirit and a bad attitude and not be kind and not be tender-hearted and not be gracious and not be pitiful, as the Bible says we ought to be. Take the matter of kindness. You work on kindness, and you know the Siamese twin that comes with kindness is compromise. I decide I'm going to get real kind. Before I know it, I find myself compromising. Take generosity. Generosity is often accompanied by irresponsibility. Before you know it, generosity, it becomes irresponsibility, and kindness becomes compromise, and conviction and courage becomes abrasiveness. And before you know it, the accompanying liability outgrows its corresponding asset, and before we know it, we have, in an effort to grow in grace, we have fallen away from what we ought to be for God. Now, you know I'm a fundamentalist. Nobody doubts that. I cross my fundamental T's and dot my fundamental I's. I call myself a fundamentalist. I'm glad to be a fundamentalist. I don't like the word conservative. I don't like the word evangelical. I like the word fundamentalist, capital N, capital U, capital F, capital U, capital N, capital D, and capital however else you spell the word. I'm a fundamentalist. Nobody who's ever heard me wonders if I'm a fundamentalist or not. I believe in a hell that has fire and a heaven that will have gates of pearl and streets of gold. I believe you've got to get born again and go to hell. I think you're going to face God someday at the great white throne judgment. I believe men are going to face God. Their sins will be uncovered and manifested and revealed. I believe in salvation by grace through faith. I'm against everything that anybody's against and against things that some folk nobody, some things nobody else is against. I'm against dancing. I'm against drinking. I'm against smoking. I'm against, and just add it, anything you want to add to it. I'm against it. I'm an old-fashioned rock rib, hellfire and brimstone, window rattling, shingle pulling, a hard-ball, bigoted, narrow-minded, lame-brained, screwball fundamentalist, any way you call it. That's what I am. That's my crowd. That's the crowd I want to run with. That's the crowd I intend to stay with. And that's my crowd. Now, when my crowd gets a bad spirit, they're still my crowd, but I'm going to try to work on the spirit if I can. And but I just don't happen to think you have to be discourteous to be a rock rib fundamentalist. I don't happen to think you don't think you have to forfeit tender-heartedness to be a rock rib fundamentalist. I don't think you have to forfeit saying yes ma'am and yes sir and no ma'am and no sir and bowing a little bit and being and standing up and giving a lady a seat in case you can find one these days. Hard to find one. And I don't think you can. I don't think you'd be a fundamentalist. You have to eliminate such things as that. Now, we face this, and here at First Baptist Church, it's creeping in. It's creeping in Hiles Anderson College. It's creeping in our boys, especially. It's creeping in Hammond Baptist High School, especially in our boys. It creeps in a church like this. It's a natural thing. No, we're not an unusual church, and no, our college is not the only one that faces this problem. And no, our high school is not the only high school. Anytime you find a conviction like we have, and courage like we have, and standards like we have, it is always accompanied by the temptation not to have kindness and courtesy and manners and so forth. Now, why? What's the cause? Why is it that it seems we cannot get one, the asset, without getting the other, the liability? Now, here's the reason. There are two different natures in each of us who've been born again. Now, the same trait poured on a person, poured on both of those natures, causes a reaction in a different way. For example, unselfishness becomes more selfish to the old nature. Even our unselfishness is selfish to the old nature. You pour unselfishness on a Christian, and it on the new nature, it's becoming. On the old nature, you get its liability. The new nature gets its asset. You take the matter of conviction. Conviction is conviction to the new nature, but you pour conviction on a Christian, and the old nature will bring out rebellion instead of conviction. You know that most fundamental churches that have troubles over the old nature having preferences substituted for convictions, and the same the same thing that makes me stand alone sometimes. And makes me preach what nobody else sometimes will preach, and makes me stand up. I've got a tape in the office last night. A young man came to my office and said, you remember you're down to a certain church that has a certain school? I said, yes. He said, what really happened that night? And I told a day. And I told him, I went to a certain fundamental church, and they had a school, and I noticed that practically every girl there in that school, fundamental church, was wearing slacks, blue jeans, or miniskirt. I couldn't believe it. Back in the back are a bunch of baboons making fun of Bill Harvey while he was singing. And and long-haired hippie kind of boys in a fundamental school. And I got up and I paid my respects to that kind of a thing. Now, that's been about 4 or 5 years ago. They don't call me Dr. Hiles down. They call me that man. That man. And the boy brought the tape of the sermon, and I'm going to listen to it tomorrow or sometime this week, the tape of the sermon I preached that morning. Now, the same thing that gives me courage to stand sometimes alone, and after the service was over that morning, 5 high school boys met me out beside out in the room beside the building, and they were going to clean my plow, but I had my cleaner along too. And so, I told them I'd be glad for them too, because I earned some judo in the army I hadn't used in quite a while. I'd like to use it, and they got pale as a ghost and decided to back off a little bit. They didn't know that my judo's all gone now. was then. I've got it back now in case you get any ambitions tonight. But but anyway, now, what made me do that? That same thing, if I don't watch it, could make me cantankerous, could make me unkind personally, could make me have sort of a gruff kind of an unchristian personality. It'll come in Hiles Anderson College. I see it already. It'll come in Hammond Baptist High School. I see it already. It comes in a church like this. I see it often in our church. Now, we fundamentalists have we have seen so much in the liberals that is counterfeit that we often overreact. A liberal, he's kind. So we decide we'll never be kind because liberals are kind. Well, ladies and gentlemen, don't quit bathing because liberals bathe. Don't quit shining your shoes because liberals shine your shoes. Don't quit eating because liberals eat. Don't quit smiling because liberals smile. I mean, don't completely overreact. And we've gotten the place where oftentimes because a liberal is kind, we think it's fundamentally sound for us to say, you old devil, you're going to hell. Let's split hell wide open. Now, I think there are times when a preacher ought to stand up and say you're going to split hell wide open. I doubt if there's ever a time for a person to be personally unkind to anybody. We've seen the liberals use manners. We've seen liberals maybe bow a little bit and be kind and courteous. Now, if we don't watch out, we'll leave that grace. I said grace. We'll leave that to the liberal, and we fundamentalists will not behave properly toward each other. And we'll become abrasive, uncouth, unkind, crude, and even mean in our personal behavior. Now, I'm not suggesting, ladies and gentlemen, that we copy the liberal. But let's not let the counterfeit copy cause us to destroy the original. I mean, we are the original. Just because they copy with a counterfeit love doesn't keep us from manifesting genuine love. Just because they copy our counterfeit grace, or with a counterfeit grace, our genuine grace should not cause us to eliminate our genuine grace. Just because they have a synthetic tenderheartedness does not mean that we ought to flee true tenderheartedness. You take the matter of baptism. I know people that say, okay, baptism saves. So what happens? Some folks say, okay, we won't baptize at all. They say, this is not the dispensation of baptism. No, don't run from the truth because somebody misappropriates the truth or abuses the truth. Let's take the matter of legalism. There are some folks that say you've got to do a certain thing to go to heaven. And we're against that. So if we don't watch out, we won't have any convictions at all. People often say, yeah, old Hiles is a legalist. No, Hiles is not a legalist. Hiles is a separationist. Legalism says you've got to do certain things to go to heaven. Separation says because you're going to heaven, you ought to live a certain way out of gratitude. But let's don't run from separation because some are legal. Let's don't run from love because some have counterfeit love. Let's don't run from courtesy because some have counterfeit courtesy. Let's don't run from tenderheartedness because some have a fake tenderheartedness. Let's not refuse to use the original and destroy that which is original that comes from God because a few liberals and quacks have tried to counterfeit what we have that is the real original. Now, in some areas, we're falling prey to it here. Because we have the best of everything here, and because we do things that I think we have the best things in the world, the best church in the world, the best schools in the world, there are some temptations unique to us that are unique to nobody else. There are some temptations that hound us. Now, one of those temptations is arrogance. Arrogance. Arrogance is never fitting for a Christian. Arrogance never becomes a child of God. Nothing is more unbecoming a Christian than pride, arrogance, being uncouth, being crude in our behavior toward each other. And if we don't watch it now, we'll become arrogant. There are seven things the Bible says God hates, and pride, a proud look, is listed twice. So God doesn't like a proud look, and God doesn't like arrogance, and God doesn't like abrasiveness. Being from First Baptist Church, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't make any one of us better than anybody else. Just because you go to the best church in the world does not mean that you're one of the best Christians in the world. We have to watch it constantly. Our basketball team can go play somebody else's basketball team. And though we don't fight with them or fuss with them, there's a certain kind of an arrogant look and behavior we can manifest because we go to Hammond Baptist High School. No, the fact that you go to Hammond Baptist High School doesn't make you one whit better than anybody else. You stand or fall on your own merit, not on the merit of the school you attend. Oh, yes, I go to First Baptist Church, Hammond. That doesn't make any difference. You still got to make it on your own. You still got to meet God and walk with God and stay in the book and be the kind of Christian you ought to be. I don't want us to ever get the place where the athletic team from our high school or representatives of our college have somewhat of a I'm better than you attitude or I'm better than you look. No, the truth is some of the finest Christians I know go to schools that have 50 and 60 in attendance. Some of the sweetest Christians I know in this world go to little churches out in the country with 50 or 60 in attendance. Some of the sweetest Christians I know would give anything in the world to come to First Baptist Church Hammond just for one time. They'll probably never get to come here. But that doesn't give us any right to think we're better than somebody else. No, you're not better than somebody else because you go to Hiles Anderson College. Hiles Anderson College may be the best school in the whole world, while you may be the poorest Christian in the whole student body. Hammond Baptist High School may be the very best high school in the entire world, but you might be the worst Christian in any given convention somewhere because you have an arrogant look, a proud look, and an arrogant spirit. No, it's not becoming. The honest truth is, God does not want us to be that way. Now, with our convictions has become pride. With our courage has become recklessness. With our growth in numbers is becoming growth in hat size. With our growth in education has come a growth in snobbishness. Now, someone right now is saying, boy, I'm glad you're getting them. Yeah, and you just fell in the same trap. Say, boy, you've been needing to get on some of these snobs for a long time. I know, and you're one of them right now. No, the honest, simple truth is, if we don't watch out in our adoration and embracing of the positive quality, we will become obnoxious to God and good people everywhere because we endorse or embrace the corresponding liability that associates or accompanies the asset that we want so badly. Now, let me tell you something. There are a lot of churches, now please don't misunderstand me, but there are a lot of churches in America that I think are doing greater works than we are. I think this is the greatest church in the world. I think this is the greatest collection of Christians in the world. But as far as growth is concerned, numbers and souls are concerned, there are numbers of churches in America that are doing greater work than First Baptist Church Hammond. We have no right to spread our peacock's feathers and say, look at me, or look at us. No right in this world. The honest truth is, every single person here is a sinner saved by grace that deserves to go to hell. There's nothing good about any of us, and the very best thing about me is as dirty as filthy rags in the sight of God Almighty, and the best thing about you is just that filthy also. No, you have no right to be proud. No, you have no right to be gruff. No, you have no right to think you're better than somebody else. No, Hammond Baptist High School may or may not be better than some other school, but you have no right to boast and brag and strut yourself while you're somewhere. I'm from Hammond Baptist High School. Yeah, I am. Look at me. Look what I am. You're just an old goat. That's what you are. You're just a proud peacock whose feathers are about to fall out. That's what you are. No, the honest truth is God wants us to be tender-hearted and kind and forbearing and gracious and mannerly. Enjoy. For example, I told this story. I love to tell it because it illustrates what I'm trying to say. I was in town one day when my folks did not know I was in town. I think it was on a Wednesday. I went upstairs to the Howell Publications and I was going to ask a few questions. There was a preacher there, a young man from over in Illinois, and a pastor of the church over there. So I walked in and said, hey, anybody home? And this preacher didn't know I was in town, and he turned around, he looked at me, and you'd thought he had seen a ghost. Now, of course, to look at this face is sort of shocking if you don't know it's coming. And it's better if you can see at a distance and sort of brace yourself for it as it comes along. But shut up. But anyway, he turned around, and he looked at me, and he said, oh, 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 I feel like I'm talking to God. And I said, man, don't get off of it. I mean, no, don't do that. Don't do that. I said, what's your name? He told me. I said, where do you pastor? He told me. I said, what size town is that? He said, 200 population. I said, how many did you have in Sunday school Sunday? He said, 700. I said, oh, oh, oh. I feel like I'm talking to God. As far as I'm concerned, that fellow's doing greater work than I am. I don't believe I could run 700 in a town. That's almost all of them. And I don't think I could do it. I mean this when I say it. I felt like I was the honored one. I felt like I had the second. You know, I was down in a meeting this last Monday and Tuesday down in Georgia. And a preacher whom I've influenced and who's been influenced by my ministry and who's built a great church, and he gives much of the credit to the fact that he's gotten lots of inspiration from me. He was on the program. But he has a rather small church. I preached in his church. Auditorium must seat about 400. And he has a big attendance, and I'd say 1,100 or 1,200. But that's less than a tenth what we average here over a year's time. And so I was the main fellow on the program. That little rascal got up Monday night, and he preached circles around me. I want you to know, I got up after he got through preaching, and I said, "Look, fella, I got a copy of the program." I said, "Look here, my name is the main name on this program, and you have not done what you're supposed to do." And he just preached circles around me. And now you say, "Brother Howard, what does that mean?" That means on any given night, the country preacher can out-preach the city preacher. That means on any given night, the little preacher can out-preach the fellow has the big church. I'm no better preacher than anybody else. I just happened to come to Hammond and Chicago area and tried to find a way to the city limits and couldn't find a way. And so I had to stay and start preaching. Some folks came to hear me. And Brother Vineyard came and got me a lot of kids and a lot of troubles. And but anyway, no, I'm saying I'm no better than he is. No, I'm a sinner saved by grace. He's a sinner saved by grace. I'm a God-called preacher. He's a God-called preacher. I'm doing the best I can. He's doing the best he can. I can tell you a lot of folks doing better works than we are. I can tell you a lot of churches more miraculous than this. Take you down there to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, out in the country at the Gospel Light Baptist Church. Stand on the front porch and you see two houses. Fell out there on 1,800, 2,000 Sunday school. Has the largest Sunday school in the state of North Carolina. Out there in the country. Bobby Robertson. He dangles his participles, hangs his gerunds, splits his infinitives, and ends his sentences of prepositions. Except he has 2,000 folks in Sunday school almost every Sunday out in the country. When I'm around him, I feel like I want his autograph. You know why? Because I'm from First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. We run 12, 13, 14, 15, 16,000 Sunday school. I know. We run off about that many every year, too. And Joe Boyd used to have a church. He lost so many folks. He was named the Open Door Baptist Church. He changed it to the Revolving Door Baptist Church. And no, there's nothing good about us. No. Anything good about us is him. And we have no right to be proud. If you want to see a great work, go up there to Rosemont, Minnesota, where our good brother Ed Johnson's out in a little town, about just a few hundred people, way out in the country, at a turn in the road, and see that fellow going up there and taking a handful of people, way out in the country, running 700, 800, 900 and 1,000 in Sunday school up there. And, no, we have nothing to brag about. Go down to Florence, South Carolina, in a town of about, I guess, 40,000 people. That brother, what's his name, I forgot all of a sudden, Florence, South Carolina, Bill Monroe, a wonderful minister there. In a town that size, about 3 or 4 years, has built a great building and a great school and one of the strongest churches in all the state of South Carolina. No, First Baptist Church of Hammond is not any union card to make you strut. I say again, I think it is the greatest collection of Christians since the New Testament church in this room tonight. But that doesn't make any one of us better than anybody else in the whole world. You go to Anchorage, Alaska. Well, that good brother up there, where it's too cold for man or beast, anybody had any sense would never go up there. Or here either. And up in Anchorage, Alaska. Biggest church in Alaska, running 300 in Sunday school. And Jerry Prevost came to our pastor's school and through other influences. Got on fire for God and went up to Anchorage, Alaska, running 1,300, 1,400 in Sunday school, way up there in the Eskimo country. Oh, my. I take my hat off to him. I bow before him. I'm simply saying there's a certain kind of I'm from Howells, Anderson College, whacking on rumpet. There's a certain kind of an attitude that doesn't please God to me either. No, that's not pleasing with God. This kind of an abrasive, cocky, know-it-all attitude because I'm from Howells, Anderson College or Hammond Baptist High School. No, that's not good, and God isn't pleased with it. Now, I want to just... did you know, for example, that more people are made ugly by beauty than by homeliness? Did you know more folks are made weak by strength than by weakness? More folks are made talented by lack of talent than by talent? More folks are made incapable by capability than incapability? Check your scripture sometime. You'll find the weak things confound the wise. the base things are the things that God uses. God has chosen the weak things of this world to confound the mighty. And this thing of, boy, I'm captain of the basketball team, Ham Baptist High School. Boy, I got shoulders like Charles Atlas. And you got a head like Charles Atlas' chest, too. You may impress all the girls, the idiots, but you won't impress God. And you dead sure don't impress decent people. Look down on some little narrow-shouldered fella. One of these days, he'll run circles around you. God will look down and choose that little guy. He'll take your chest and stick a pin in it, and he'll deflate you. He'll stick a pin in your head, and it'll all be gone. You think you're God's gift to women. Well, I wish one of them would take you off our hands right quick. Now, I want to give you some examples. There is, in this church, among the young men, and I want to talk to you lovingly, there is a mistreatment of young ladies that ought to be corrected. There's a mistreatment of young ladies that ought to be corrected. Somewhere or other, in Hiles Anderson College, some of our fellows have the idea you're supposed to have a club like they did, like the cavemen did. If you do, would you hit yourself over the head with it and rid the females of your presence? No, that's not true. No, a young woman's not supposed to be locked in a room till you get ready to go beat her up. There's a certain kind of beastly treatment of womanhood that goes on especially in the lives of many of our bus captains. Mistreatment of young ladies. Now, fellas, you say what you want to say, but young ladies are not supposed to be treated with unkindness or brutality, but rather with tenderness and courtesy and grace. You know why? Here's a fellow says, "Hey, secretary, take a letter for me." Yeah, and while you do, put one of these letter bombs in it, would you? Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not a women's liberal. I have more patience with rattlesnakes than I do the women's lib movement. I think this amendment to the Constitution, I've forgotten what it's called all of a sudden, Equal Rights Amendment, I think it's a bunch of malarkey. I'm not for women fighting for their own rights. I'm not for women trying to take over men's jobs, and I'm not for women trying to gain what they call equality of women. A woman will lose her crown, she'll lose her throne, she'll lose her grace, she'll lose her charm, she'll lose her femininity, she'll lose everything that God intended for her to be if she follows that women's lib mess. I do believe this. I believe that the opposite sex ought to be treated with a lot more courtesy than many of our young men treat them. We have at Hiles Anderson College, and I don't intend to dwell on this a great deal because there are other folks here besides Hiles Anderson students. We have at Hiles Anderson College some of the sweetest young ladies I've ever met in my life. Some of the most kind and gracious and loving young ladies. I doubt that a week passes, I don't get 10 or 12 of the sweetest notes. I mean written with feminine grace and charm. And I'll be honest with you, I don't like the jokes about Hiles Anderson girls. Somebody said, you know the difference between a Hiles Anderson girl and a garbage? What? The garbage gets taken out more. Well, if that's what you want to go out with is garbage, go ahead. It's more your type. So you know the difference between a Hiles Anderson cottage girl and an elephant? What? 5 pounds. You know what's the difference in your head and an elephant? 5 pounds, and you outweigh it. And I'd rather weigh within 5 pounds of an elephant than have your kind of a spirit. And I'd rather never get taken out than a guy like you take me out. And I'm not kidding. You check your Bible and you'll find that women deserve better treatment than that. You check your Bible and you'll find that gruff, abrasive kind of a caveman stuff. Now again, I say, you ladies say amen, you know what I'm talking about. You ladies sit there and you be willing to be obedient and submissive and all that God wants you to be. And you young ladies at Howells Anderson, this thing of saying, "Ah, show these boys a thing or two," you're just as bad as they are. But on the other hand, these sweet, precious young ladies who are willing to take it when you dish it out with your uncouth, I'll say unmanly treatment. You know, real strength doesn't have to assert itself a great deal. Weakness has to assert itself masquerading as strength. "Woman, I'll tell you what to do. I'm a man." "Well, I'm so glad you told us. We would never have dreamed it." Now, fellas, I said again, God's not pleased with that. I think the strongest leader ought to be tenderhearted. I think that the most powerful leader ought to be gracious and kind. And I still think getting up and giving a young lady your seat is an order. And I still think opening the door for a young lady is an order. And I still think speaking with grace and kindness to a young lady is an order. Sometimes young ladies come to me and they'll talk about some young lady that works on our bus routes and the awful way that some of these young men, and I mean good young men, by the way, they're the best young men we have. Now we say, why are they that way? Because they want to be prophets of God. And along with that intense desire to be a prophet of God, if you don't watch it, comes an obnoxious behavior toward those who are your followers. If I were a young lady, I don't think I'll ever be either young or a lady. But if I were a young lady, I would want tender strength for my boyfriend. I would want the security of strength and the security of tenderness in the same personality. I think some of our high school students, the very idea of a high school boy insulting a high school girl. Now, if you know her well enough to lovingly kid her, that's different. Let's suppose, for example, these men on the platform. We often kid each other. They kid me, I kid them. But we love each. We've earned that right because of our love for each other. But this thing of insulting some girl when you're in high school, and you do it in front of people to show off the fact that you're a he-man, I think you're a weasel. Yeah, I think you're a weasel. No, strength doesn't have to, here's fellas like this all the time. No, strength doesn't have to do that. You get in the way of strength, it'll mow you down whether it has a whistle or not. Strength doesn't have to say, "Look, I'm strong." You'll find it out. The kind of dog that really ought to be scared of, he doesn't bark much. The chihuahua does all the barking. I had an old bulldog take the seat of my britches out one time and a little bit of the seat under my britches too out one time. And he didn't give me any forewarning at all. I mean, he didn't have any burglar alarm at all. I had a paper out and I walked up and to see the paper on the front porch, and he decided that he wanted bite of me. So he decided to feast on me for a while. I jumped the fence, and about the time I got over the fence, he decided he had to. That'd be a good time to get me while I was in the air. He didn't give me any warning at all. No, the strong people don't have to say it. Strong people don't have to flex their muscles a great deal. And strong young men don't have to act like prudes to impress young ladies. And young ladies, don't you be impressed by that kind. The truth is, that kind of young man is so egocentric, he'll be self-centered the rest of his life and not be worth a thing to you. Then there's the same problem I think we face on those that work under you. especially volunteers. For example, I hardly ever talk in any way but courteous terms to my teachers and officers. Now, sometimes I'll say, "Folks, we've got to do it. In God's name, folks are going to hell, and you know it." But I hardly ever get up and call the teachers and officers any names. Or I don't go to deacon's meetings and say, "You lazy devils, why don't you get with it?" No, I don't do that. That's not the way for leadership to behave toward fellowship. And whatever degree of leadership that God has given you in this church, you'll do a lot better, be a lot better if you'll have a courtesy and kindness. Now, I don't mean lose your conviction. I don't mean not challenge people. But listen, you'll get more done for people if you'll inspire them rather than demand them, especially if they're volunteer followers. Now, there are a lot of folks in this church who are good people. They'll follow you because they love me. They'll follow you because they're good people. They'll follow you because they love this church. But, preacher boys, you'll never build a church with an uncouth, crude kind of overpowering dictatorial attitude over your people. You never will. Some of our young men go out and they don't get all of Jack Hiles or all of Vineyard or all of Fisk or all of Billings or all of Helton or all of Evans. They just get that little part that's the most spectacular. When I stand up and I say, nobody's going to tell me what to preach. God tells me what to preach. They walk out. And somebody says, we have a guest preacher today. He walks up and says, good morning. Nobody's going to tell me what to preach. Now, you don't do that the first thing. You know, it's not wrong to try to win folks to you. It's not wrong to, with a smile and a bit of courtesy, try to make folks like you a little bit. That's not pussyfooting. Yeah, I don't folks to like me. I don't like Jesus. They won't like Jesus unless they like you first. They got like the salesman. So now I believe in conviction. Nobody wonders about that. But I still believe those that work under my staff, for example. I have a staff of experts. Now sometimes I'll say to the staff, good night, we've got to get this job done. But I never, Brother Fisk, in all the years that you've worked for me, I use the word work a bit loosely there, of course. But in all the years you've worked for me, I don't think I've ever called you a name. I've never said, you buzzard, you, why don't you get with it? Now, there are times that I have certainly thought that that would be descriptive of your behavior. But no, I've never. Why? Because these men on the platform happen to be experts, each an expert in his own right. And I need these men. And I don't need to call them names Brother Fisk happens to be the best soul winner, one of the best soul winners in America, if not the best winner of adults anywhere I've ever seen in the world. He's an expert in his own right. Dr. Evans is an expert in his own right. Dr. Vineyard is Mr. Bus in America. Brother Colston is the the epitome of grace and compassion and love at the bedside when he's trying to be, when he's kind and visiting people who are in trouble. And these men, now, I may scold them sometime, or I may say, man, we've got to do it and do it right. But, no. One reason why my staff, you'll forgive me, my staff is loyal to me. Brother Fisk, how long has it been since you first came to work here? 14 years he's worked with me. Brother Boardway has been here in this church for all of my ministry here. On the staff, let's see. Mrs. Flopper has been with me now, I guess, 16 years. And Maxine Jeffers has been with me, I guess, 15 or 16 years. Miss Colton, how long have you been employed with the church now? 14 years on the staff. And Mrs. Shove, how long have you been on our staff? Mrs. Shove, how long were you on our staff, Mrs. Shove? And I could go on and on, folks, on my staff. Now, folks don't stay on the staff. I don't walk in every morning and say, oh, okay, you're Packer, well, just get with it. No, I don't do that. Now, sometimes I'll have to scold. But I am saying, I have the finest collection of staff members in the world today. And they have a right to be treated like the experts that they are. And they have a right to be treated with grace. And courtesy. I never, never called any of them names. And rarely ever, not that many times in 17 years almost, have I lost my temper. Absolutely lost my temper to anybody on the staff. Not that many times in 17 years. And those five times or less, I shouldn't have, I'm sure. And probably I've said I'm sorry most of those times. Now, young men especially, listen to me. Don't you get the idea that you're supposed to go out and become abusive to a bunch of people, and they are your slaves and non-entities, and they're just little you have a lever, and you, or you push a button, they're supposed to jump up like, no, people are human. And each person is a human being, and he has his own problems, his own personality, and he deserves to be treated like that. Young ladies, no, ladies on my staff have a right to be treated like ladies. We have a joke on the staff that to work for us, you have to be three things. Let's see. Dumb. What else is it? Dumb, masculine, and ugly. That's right. I don't know how Brother Fisk got in. He's not dumb. He's not ugly. He's not masculine. So I don't know how he got in. But the truth is, each lady has a right to have a friendly good morning from Brother Hiles. And each lady has a right to be respected and to be treated with courtesy and decency. And some of you fellows on the buses. Now, these young ladies that work with you on bus route, they're not your slaves. You don't pay them any money. A good God bless you and thank you for all you do might get more response than, you get living on tired of what you're doing. Oh, do me a favor. Get your DD from Hiles Anderson. That stands for drop dead. So you're not masculine because you're gruff. No. True masculinity is tender and has enough strength to assert itself. And strength will convince the follower that its leadership is capable. Well, let's go a step further. that is the treatment of elders with respect. No, I don't think you ought to call elders with a first name. Ever. Never. I don't think you ought to call a pastor with his first name. I think that it does irreparable harm to young people when they're allowed to call their pastor or other spiritual leaders by their first name. I go a step further. I believe we ought to have courtesy and manners toward each other. I do not think it is good taste for a woman to call somebody else's husband by his first name. I think it is always, for example, take a fellow like Larry Stromberg. Good-natured, sound asleep right now, but good-natured. Larry Stromberg, he has fun. Everybody loves Larry Stromberg and so forth. It'd be awful easy, folks, to say, "Hello, Larry." I do not think that's in good taste. I think you ladies ought to call him Brother Larry or Brother Stromberg or Mr. Stromberg. Especially is that true in the case of younger ladies. I almost always say yes, sir, and no, sir to everybody, every man, even younger men. I say yes, sir, and no, sir. I believe we need to get back in America to a little bit more formality. I think you men come down to the table to eat breakfast in your shorts and undershirt. I think you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Somebody ought to teach you to be proper a little bit. Run around the house with your dirty, hairy legs sticking out. Look like a back end of a porcupine. I believe in propriety. Now, I don't believe you ought to wear a tuxedo out fishing. I don't think you ought to wear blue jeans to church either. I never have gotten used to having a wedding up here, standing up here in a beautiful wedding, and folks have spent thousands of dollars to have a beautiful, impressive, lovely wedding. And here comes some fool in a T-shirt and a turtleneck sweater. I believe it might be good if that fellow just learned how to dress before he comes. I believe in propriety. And I think we ought to develop a little bit more formality. And I'm not talking about ritualism. I'm talking about propriety. I mean, a good Christian ought to know which fork to use when he's eating out somewhere. If you're eating where they have more forks than one. Everybody understood why I have more than one? But it just start on the outside and work in. That's all. Somebody one day, Emily Post did a banquet, and a fellow beside her said, "Miss Post, said, which salad are you supposed to eat, the one on the right or the one on the left?" She said, "Well, the one on the left, of course." He said, "Then you just ate my salad, Miss Post." Now, I believe in good manners. I don't think, well, I tell you what, boy, I don't care where I am. I'll slop my gravy if I want to. Well, and so will all rest the fools, too. There are times you shouldn't sop your gravy. There are times you ought to have manners. And our boys and girls ought to be taught manners. And there are times that we ought to put the left hand on the table while we eat. The dumbest thing I ever knew her of. Nothing in the world harder than chasing one English pea all over the creation with one hand, trying not to chase it. But if that's propriety, when I went to Japan, went to church, I took my shoes off. You say, well, you think that's right? No, I think it's sort of dumb. But that's their custom. When I went to a house, I took my shoes off. Why? That's their custom. Somebody came walking in while we were there. Some company came walking in, and the fella got up and bowed all the way to the floor. I got up and bowed all the way to the floor. Never had done it in my life. Didn't know how to do it, but did it. Why? That's their custom. As long as it's not some kind of religious custom that's pagan and heathen, there's nothing wrong with it. Courtesy and manners. Never smart. Whatever happened to the word please and thank you? Hey, throw me that! Did you ever hear the word please? Two little words. Both are the keys. Thank you, sir. And the other, please. Then I think also we ought to respect older members of the church more than we do. For some of you, you folks to come in here and treat with disrespect people who've been in this church through all these years is in poor taste. There wouldn't be any Hiles Anderson colleges. Some of these folks on which you look down a little critically sometimes hadn't have stood in the gap all through these years. There are people that gave their life's blood to Hiles Anderson College to keep the doors open that never have been out there and will never have anybody go out there, and as far as they personally concerned, it means nothing to them. It's not a part of their life at all. But Brother Hiles said, we've got to do it. And they love Brother Hiles and love this church and believe what I say, and they've done it. Now, if you to call them with their first name is in poor taste. And if you to treat them with anything other than respect and courtesy is in very poor taste. There is a fundamentalism that preaches hell with no tears that I don't like. It preaches against sin with no heartbreak, and I don't like it. It preaches against judgment with no sleepless nights. Or on judgment with no sleepless night, and I don't like it. There is a manliness with no gentleness that is weakness. There is a strength with no thoughtfulness that is weakness. There is a beauty with no grace that is ugliness. There is a courage with no compassion that is recklessness. There is a leadership with no understanding that is abrasiveness. There is an authority with no tenderness that is rudeness. Now, Yusuf of the House, why does this happen? We get used to each other, that's why. We get used to each other. And before we know it, we have become discourteous. I think you ought to say please at home and thank you at home. And would you pass the bread, please, and thank you when it's passed. There's a certain kind of grace that fundamentalists find it awfully uncomfortable to wear that we ought to wear. And that's from that high all the way up. Did you know that add to conviction being pitiful or tender-hearted and you'll get 10 times as much done for God as you would any other way in the whole world? I've seen our preacher boys go out before we had a Hiles Anderson College. I've seen them go out and take only one side of Brother Hiles and stay 2 or 3 months and come back home failures. But don't preach the hell unless you get the tears. And don't fight the sin unless you get the broken heart. I married my own son. We could go last Friday. I married a couple last Friday night here in the auditorium. We had 3,000 people at Dave's wedding. We probably had 100, 125 at this wedding. Balcony was almost filled at Dave's wedding. Just these two sections were about a third filled piece at this wedding. You'll forgive me for being a little bit maybe overly optimistic and overly expressive about my own compassion. But I doubt if anybody that was at the wedding last Friday night would find the wedding was any less beautiful as far as my part was concerned, when I married my own son. And I felt a certain kind of a love and a tenderness toward that couple. I laughed. I sat down with a groom in the waiting room over here. I said, "Where'd you meet her? Where'd you propose? When did you first know you loved her?" And I said, when did you first know that you loved her and you told her?" And the groom said, "We're coming back from Chicago on the 4th of July. We're going out to Hiles Anderson College for the fireworks demonstration." And he said, before we knew it, we found ourselves in Iowa. I said, "Let me get this straight. You're coming to Chicago, and before you knew it, you found yourself in Iowa." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Took the wrong turn." And I laughed and I laughed. And he thought I'd believe that stuff. I said, "When did you find out you're in Iowa?" He said, "We were across the bridge going over."